Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Morning, are you all right? It's Tuesday, the 2nd of June. Now, in the year of our Lord, 2026, it's just ticked past 8 in the AM, British summertime. You're on the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. As always, I'm joined by my producer, little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, yeah, I'm all good.
Good. Why am I sitting in this seat? Because I've got a guest in. Who is it? Restores Charlie Downs.
I love watching you do that in real life.
Really?
Yeah. I said last time, it's a privilege, it's an honour.
Oh, well, thank you. You flatter me, sir. You flatter me. All right, thanks for coming in again. Really appreciate it. All right then, so I've got to make sure I remember. Wait, no, this is the camera. Okay, that's the camera. All right. Should we just get into it, straight into it? Should we stop faffing about, stop fanning about?
Let's.
Just get straight into it. Let's talk about what the legacy corporate mainstream media are banging on about. I warned the glorious band, the chosen few, yesterday that it would be a Mandelson day today. Mm. Not Mandy day. Isn't that that's a euphemism for a drug, isn't it?
It is.
Mandy.
Yeah.
So if you say it's like a Mandy day.
I hope not.
Wall to wall Mandy.
It's going to be an interesting show if it is.
Yeah. We're going to OD on Mandy. Mandelson news. We're ODing on Mandelson news.
That's I don't know which I'd prefer, to be honest.
Okay. So Mandelson files lay bare frustration and the welfare party. So there was this big dump. We'll talk all about Restore and all sorts of things during the show, but let's just do the headlines because nominally that's supposed to be the format of the show. So let's whip through them a little bit, get that out of the way, and then we can talk about Makerfield and
sounds
hit
good.
Pieces and yep. Inquiries and all sorts of stuff. All right. So The Guardian, then. It is wall-to-wall Mandy as well, it really is. Mandelson files reveal security briefings before vetting passed. Okay. So, declassified emails shed more light on appointment scandal, ex-US ambassador's criticism of Prime Minister's lack of verve also disclosed. So, one thing I'll say, actually, is because where this was... It's well over 1,000 pages of documents. Some are reporting 1,500 pages of documents. That actually takes more than one afternoon for journalists to go through.
Indeed.
So it may well be over the coming few days, even as much as a week, really, there's like a new revelation where people have actually got to the stuff. But so far, we're just getting basically, it seems like quite a lot of text messages or WhatsApp messages between people. Have you been looking at the news cycle much over the last 24 hours?
I mean, I was looking through the dump this morning on the train.
Document dump.
Yes, indeed. And yeah, I mean, to be honest, a lot of it is incredibly mundane. That's basically right. My takeaway. Right. But
oh, were you looking through the actual document?
Yeah, I've got it here in front of me. Yeah, volume two. Yeah, and it's very, very dense, and a lot of it is redacted.
Yeah, I heard.
And to be honest,
a sea of Tippex.
Exactly. Yeah, that is how I don't know who described it that way, but I did see that on one of the headlines. Mm. Yeah, I mean, look, being honest, I can't make heads or tails of a lot of this. It's very, you know, it's poorly formatted because it's literally just emails, you know, on A4 sheets. Right. But there has been some quite interesting things come out from it. Comments about Starmer. Comments about others, links to Twitter pages like Inevitable West being sent by Mandelson, which I thought was quite funny.
Really?
Yeah.
Inevitable West?
Yeah.
Okay.
And various others. Yeah, various other anons. So, you know.
That's odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder why that, of all things.
Yeah.
You never know, do you?
No.
Like when Elon follows someone obscure, you're like, really? You're going to follow him? You're going to retweet that person? Okay.
Yes.
Like, including me, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Mandelson followed Inevitable West. Right, weird.
Yeah.
The iPaper's the next one. This gives us sort of some of the best blurb. Mandelson files reveal how the PM's authority crumbled. Rare glimpse into the inner workings and private messages of UK cabinet ministers. 1,500 pages of documents do not contain any smoking gun, says the iPaper. Although show how quickly some of Keir Starmer's key allies lost faith in his ability to lead the government. Prime Minister's authority was, quote, destroyed, quote, by a welfare U-turn amid Labour revolt, according to a senior loyalist in the cabinet, Work Secretary Pat McFadden, who's been a been in the Blairite New Labour project since day one.
Yep.
He's been friends with Mandy since the 1980s, even. So Pat McFadden is about as plugged in as you can get. Also privately accused fellow Labour MPs of asking, who can we tax in order to pay benefits to others in, quote, every meeting I have, quote.
I mean, that's been the main...
That's sort of probably...
That's been the main thing that I've seen going around, is that comment from McFadden.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, it's like something out of the thick of it.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, isn't it? A few of the pages go with exactly that.
Mm.
Who's left to... Yeah, so like the Telegraph goes with, who can we tax more, basically?
Yes.
But that is sort of socialism, who can be taxed to pay benefits, front page of the Express. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably one of the key takeaways. Is that, and it's sort of what we always knew, it's like what I on Breakfast with Bo talk about, and the Lotus Eaters, is that leftist economic theory is just that.
Yeah.
It's how can we destroy millionaires and billionaires, obviously. Yeah. Obviously they need to be destroyed. Then just the wealthy.
Yes.
Tax them into oblivion. Then the middle class. And in the end, kulaks. In the end, working class people that have got anything left.
Yeah.
That's what socialism is.
It is, yeah.
And so people like us would say that about this government or about Rachel Reeves. Mm-hmm. And it's just true. I mean, this sort of just vindicates that view, doesn't it?
I think something, we may have spoken about this before, Bo, but, you know, not to get too in the weeds on, you know, economic theory at 8 o'clock in the morning, like this, but it's like we have the worst of all possible worlds economic system in this country, because yes, you have the socialism, the kind of arbitrary robbing of people to pay the indolent and the foreign just, you know, money for doing nothing. Mm. But you also have a highly kind of corporatized culture, consumerist culture, where every high street in the country looks identical. It's all just McDonald's, Starbucks, charity shops, obviously your vape shops and your Turkish barbers and all the rest of it. They've become generic. You know, everywhere you go in the country, save for the most wealthy areas. Mm. Like, you know, I went to the Lake District last year and I was walking around the high streets in Windermere. And thinking, oh my goodness, it's an actual town. It's an actual place with some personality. Not like, you know, where I grew up or where I went to university or anything like that, where it's all just a kind of, you know, generic sort of, you know, universalized high street. And, you know, so in that sense, you don't even get the good out of capitalism, where, you know, you have, you know, ordinary people able to start businesses and become wealthy because everything is monopolized by big international corporates. Mm. So, you know, everyone loses apart from the most wealthy and the government and the indolent. Mm. Like, it's like, you know, greed and laziness are rewarded whilst hard work and prudence are punished.
Mm. Organized crime.
And that.
Yeah. So, yeah, you get like a McDonald's, you get a Tesco, a Greggs.
Yeah.
Plenty of Greggs.
Yeah.
If you want a dirt cheap, crappy sausage roll, you can get that.
Yeah.
Poundland.
Costa.
Yeah, Costa, Poundland. Yeah.
I'm not innocent. I mean, I'm drinking. I drink now.
And, of course, tons and tons of fronts for organised crime.
I've got to say as well,
brilliant.
We're going to get into this shortly, I think, but I posted a tweet recently about the vape shops, the Turkish barbers, the American candy shops and all this nonsense that are just everywhere now. Mm. They're on every high street. Mm. And I said, like, look, everybody knows that these are fronts for illegal activity. Everyone knows that this is money laundering, right? But I think what a lot of people don't realise is what the crimes, what the criminal activity that is being laundered actually is. Because, yes, you can, you know, you can imagine the drug trade, but also human trafficking. Mm. Also, dark, you know, most darkly, the grooming gangs. Mm. Because something that our inquiry has shown... which was, yeah, this was known already, but I think it's been shown without a shadow of a doubt now since our testimonies came out. It is that the grooming gangs, the nationwide network, because it's not just isolated cases of, you know, weirdo degenerates doing this because they enjoy it in Bradford and Luton and wherever else. It is one coherent nationwide network of gangs, criminal gangs, that also deal in drugs, also deal in arms, and who trade rape for money. That is what's happening here. So when you patronise vape shops and Turkish barbers, which are always empty, when you, frankly, engage in the drug trade, you are funding the grooming gangs. That's what's happening there. Because it's all one criminal empire.
It's terrible. I've said a couple of times, a number of times actually on this show, that if it were me, if I found myself king, Lord Protector, or Prime Minister with a vast majority, I would go to war with that.
Yes.
I would spend tons and tons of political capital, time, energy, money, throw lots of money, throw lots and lots of people at it, whole new departments. I would, I swear to God, I'd go to war with them at every possible angle.
Yes.
As hard as possible. If that meant sort of some sort of quite profound civil unrest, because of course they would kick back, so be it.
Yes.
Bring it on. That's these gangs, this organised crime network or networks, whatever it is, it's a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It's honestly a malignant cancer on our society, on our country. It needs to be cut out and dumped in a medical bin.
Yes.
And then burnt.
And again, for you know, to state the obvious, it is all as a result of immigration, largely legal immigration. Because you think back in the 20th century, before you know mass immigration really ramped up, the kind of crime that you'd have, obviously you'd still have crime, but it was like the Kray twins. You know, they weren't, you know, it wasn't like organized, you know, gang rape. Operations where, you know, 12-year-old girls are changing hands for money and these guys are trading drugs for the rape of children, vulnerable children from care homes and all the rest of it. You know, and I've got to say, just on Restore, in Makerfield, this is a problem, obviously, being in Greater Manchester. It is one of these areas that has been, if not directly, then indirectly scarred by this scourge. And in Ashton, for example, one of the huge problems they have is the high street just being colonised by vape shops and Turkish barbers. And so one of our policies that we are pledging to the people of Makerfield is a full investigation into what exactly those businesses are.
Mm.
Why exactly they're there, why they're always empty, yet always seem to be able to, you know, turn a profit.
Yeah.
What is that?
And why haven't the council and or the police shut them down? I mean, I've seen a few pieces of journalism where they do, like the standards agencies or the police go in, close them down, and then they just open up again.
Same people.
Right, the exact same people, right. So something more draconian needs to be done then, doesn't it?
Yes.
Absolutely. No, that's a great thing. I do think that these vape shops and things are, I mean, I'm probably stating the obvious, but it's a symptom of something much, much bigger and much, much darker.
Yes.
Much, much bigger than just simply a front for laundering money for drugs.
Yeah.
Like they're selling loads of weed and they're laundering their money through that. No. No.
I wish it was just that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Wish we could go back to our good old-fashioned British gangsters like the Krays or the Richardsons or Albert Reddin. Back when they would bash a nonce, if anything.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be part of it.
Yeah, and I've got to say, I mean, on that point, the way I sort of visualise it in my mind is these, you know, these shop fronts, these Turkish barbers and vape shops and all the rest of it, that is just merely the facade. It's the public-facing element of what is actually a vast, you know, it's tentacles. It's a massive network that stretches across the entire country now. Yeah. Wasn't always that way, but in recent in recent years, post-Boris wave especially, you go anywhere and these people, these businesses are present.
Of course it wasn't always like that. I remember not that long ago, even really not that long ago, I mean, like 2010 or something, say it's 2010 roughly, this just wasn't a thing.
No.
Like at all. And when I was a kid in the 80s or teenager in the 90s, nothing, not one element of this, not one tiny, it wasn't like, oh, there's one like weird shop on the high street that no one ever goes in and everyone sort of suspects that it's something nefarious is going on. No, never, not one thing like that.
Yeah.
So this is entirely new, entirely imported.
Mm.
So they came here recently, they can go back. They came here against our will.
Yeah.
They can go back against their will if need be.
Of course.
Forced re-migration.
Yeah.
Mass forced re-migration.
Yeah.
If millions need to go.
What is the alternative?
Yeah, right, yeah. Just give up. Just allow your society to be...
To die. To be
completely and utterly destroyed by organised crime.
Yeah.
And the worst types of organised crime.
Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned there a little bit about... the inquiry.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about what's been going on recently in the last 24 or 36 hours.
So yesterday we had our debate in Westminster Hall, which was prompted by a petition that we ran on the mandatory collection of ethnicity data when as it pertains to child sex offences. This is not something that's currently in place, which is why there is such a dearth of data on this issue. But of course, the data that we do have is damning because it points to massive overrepresentation among the Pakistani Muslim community, primarily the Muslim community more generally, in the organized trafficking, grooming, raping, torturing of predominantly young white English girls. And in this debate, Rupert gave a very powerful and moving speech, simply reading out some quotations from the testimonies that we heard at the Rape Gang Inquiry hearings in February. These were, harrowing to listen to at the time, even more harrowing to listen to once again, now that we are even more aware of the full extent of what's been going on. He gave the testimony of a girl who had a glass bottle inserted into her private parts, which then shattered. We heard the testimony of a girl who was left bleeding from both her, and these are direct quotes, both her vagina and her back passage, following a gang rape at the age of, I think, 13, 14 or 15. I'd have to check that. And as I say, Rupert read these out in Westminster Hall to an assembly of MPs. And that was it, basically. And I mean, the rest of the debate was, it was okay. There was much hand-wringing about something must be done and all the rest of it. Of course, where we are trying to do something with our independently funded inquiry, we're shot down by both of our opponents in Reform and also Labour and also the mainstream press. We're told that it's pointless, in spite of the fact that the testimonies that we have heard, it's the first time these stories have come to light. These girls who, these survivors, have been given a platform. And yeah, we don't have statutory powers. Of course we don't. But it's better than nothing, And until the government is prepared to do something, this is really all we've got. And so we are building our findings into our manifesto, into our policy offering as a party. And Rupert put out a very powerful tweet yesterday in which he said, if Restore Britain wins power, the Pakistani Muslims who were engaged in these sorts of activities, and the others, of course, but again, it's primarily Pakistani Muslims, will know the wrath of the English people in a way that they never, I think, could never comprehend. Because when the power of the state that has thus far covered for them is turned against them, they will know justice. And so we are going to be publishing the full report into our Rape Gay Inquiry, with the testimonies included in the coming weeks. And we're confident that the materials, the findings, the conclusions of that report will transform the conversation in this country, not just around this issue, but around everything that's gone wrong. Because this is the point about the rape gangs, is they are the ultimate manifestation of everything that is wrong in Britain. Because you can talk about tax, you can talk about the decline of our high streets and all this sort of thing, and these are very important issues. But when you look at the fact that thousands, tens of hundreds of thousands possibly, of young, vulnerable English girls, almost exclusively, many of whom were living in care homes, many of whom came from broken homes, but many of whom came from normal backgrounds, fairly stable backgrounds. This is not limited to just one class, have been kidnapped, groomed, trafficked, tortured, raped, and in some cases murdered by these migrant communities, which, as you just said, were brought here against our will in the first place and remain here against the will of many of the people in this country. And, the fact that it was covered up by not just the central government, but local police forces, local healthcare services, the local council, the children's homes themselves, many of which were actually complicit in these crimes. One of the testimonies we heard included a portion where the survivor talked about how the staff at the care home would bring the children out to the Pakistani taxi drivers. The taxi drivers would hoot their horn and a child would be brought out. It's just, literally every aspect of this travesty.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
It's the worst thing that's ever happened to us as a people, ever, in our thousands of years of history. That is my view. It's worse than, you're the expert here, but it's worse than the harrying of the North. It's worse than...
So on a bigger scale.
It's worse than anything that has happened in our history.
I mean, it's sort of unbelievable. It's sickening, isn't it? Truly, truly, truly sickening. When some of these girls go to the police just say, just stop misbehaving. You're just a naughty girl. You're just a prostitute or something.
At best.
They're talking to a 14 or 15-year-old girl.
Yes. And another one of the testimonies we heard, and this is slightly paraphrasing, but the quote was, my main interaction with the police was them raping me. Because the police forces themselves, individual officers, were not just covering up these crimes, not just turning a blind eye, but actually engaged with the gangs.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. That's largely new to me. I heard one or two rumours that something like that was going on, but is that a thing as well?
Well, according to the survivors that we spoke to, yes.
It's mad that we've actually had various inquiries over the years, haven't we? And they've always been, ultimately, an exercise in whitewashing one way or another,
yes,
haven't they? And so this inquiry is not that.
And this was what was frustrating yesterday. And look, I kind of understand this, because all child sexual exploitation and abuse is obviously disgusting and evil and needs to be absolutely expunged from our society.
Of course.
But the way in which certain political leaders will say, well, it's not just limited to the, you know, Pakistani Muslim community, because, as you said earlier, you know, plenty of white British people are child sexual abusers. And so actually all child sexual abuse is wrong. And it's immoral to identify one as being more wrong than another. When in fact, in my view, certainly, the rape gangs are orders of magnitude worse than individual actors, in a family or
just
in
to make
school.
It, just know. To make it clear for the audience, where I was saying that earlier off camera, I was saying what the other side's argument was, not that I believe that.
No, so yeah, sure.
Just to be clear, that, yeah. I wasn't playing defence on behalf of.
Yeah, no, no.
I was saying that's what they say.
Yeah, but you talk about
whitewashing. They say, like, Politics Joe or someone or other will say, oh, but. Or Navarra Media. Oh, but white people also do child sex crimes as well. It's like, we're not talking about that, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but we're not talking about that.
Like one of
we're
the
talking about an imported problem here.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
A voluntary, like an optional problem. We didn't have to go down this route, but our leaders chose to send us down it for reasons that I can't even begin to wrap my head around. But one of the Lib Dems yesterday, for example, one of the Lib Dem MPs who was present at the debate, insinuated... it was quite explicit. He said, certain people in this room are choosing to focus on this particular set of crimes for questionable reasons. Obviously, basically accusing Rupert of being a racist. That was the subtext. And it's like, if you are still in that mindset, I can't understand.
Yeah, that's evil. I'm done with that. I'm done with listening to that anymore. Any sort of apologetics on behalf of this evil, any sort of playing defence on their behalf in any way, done with that.
And it is
not interesting. Not interested in hearing that anymore.
Yeah.
Like, even people that say, oh, this inquiry Rupert and Restore have done, it doesn't have any statutory powers, so what was the point of that? It's like, are you kidding me?
Matt Goodwin the other day.
Are you kidding me with that argument?
Yeah.
Don't give me that argument. That's disgusting. Why are you saying that?
Mm.
Why are you saying that? Of course it's of value.
Yes.
Of course it's important.
Yeah. Matt Goodwin the other day said, anyone dumb enough to buy into Lowe's grooming gang inquiry is this, that and the other. And Connor Tomlinson, our mutual friend, rightly said, so the survivors that came forward, who'd never had a platform before, who'd never spoken about this publicly, who bravely, you know, sort of reopened that trauma that I'm sure they've all worked very hard to get past, they're dumb, are they? Dumb for coming up and giving their testimony so that the British public can understand the depths of the horror that's been going on. They're dumb, according to Matt GPT.
Well, someone like Matt and all the various reform tards that are trying to pour cold water on this thing, imagine the calculation they're making in their head. It's not about sex crime. It's not about the victims, the horror of it, the unparalleled crime that's been committed against us. It's about point scoring between Reform and Restore. That is insane and sickening. That is morally bankrupt to do that, as far as I'm concerned. If Nigel had done this, as he promised, I would be 100% behind it. 100% behind it. Being like, yes, Nigel's actually done something good for once.
Yeah. But based on his performance in the Westminster Hall debate yesterday, which, to his credit, he did attend, I would imagine that Reform's independent rape gang inquiry would just be Nigel Farage standing there saying, I've been talking about this for 12 years, which is exactly what he did yesterday. Made it about himself, as he always does.
Okay, I just hope one or either of the parties that are prepared to actually talk about it get into power. Of course, I would rather restore. Yeah. Because this is sort of one of the most important things. Mm. Perhaps the most important thing. In fact, it's all wrapped up in the same thing of organised crime, actual sex crime against our women and children, and mass deportations, yes, remigration. It's all part of sort of the same thing, the same problem, the same fix.
Yes.
All of it. We need a government that's actually going to do it. It's actually going to talk about it, actually going to put in place policies to save us from this nightmare, this ongoing nightmare. That's the other thing that really annoys me. I remember, it was quite a while ago now, it was probably a year or two ago, I saw Jacob Rees-Mogg on GB News. And GB News themselves had done a bit of investigative journalism. And they were talking about how there's still rape gangs, there's still grooming gangs all over the place.
Absolutely.
And Jacob Rees-Mogg pretending to be shocked or surprised by that. Like, oh, what? It's not still going on, is it? Surely not, is it? Come on, bro.
Yeah.
Come on, dude. Like, why are you doing that? Why are you pretending you don't know?
Probably because he was in government and could have done something about this, but didn't.
I mean, we have to have a reckoning with this. There has to be one.
And this is kind of what I was getting at earlier. It's almost like the rape gangs, the grooming gangs, are what happen when every single thing that has gone wrong in Britain comes together and manifests. Because there's the individual problems. There's the corrupt policing. There's the corrupt judiciary, corrupt local government, corrupt national government, mass immigration, vulnerable young girls, like the breakdown of families, the breakdown of communities, the fact that particularly these towns in the north where this has been going on at such scale, these are places that have been hollowed out. These are places where there's no industry, there's no work. Mm. They are economically deprived. Mm. There's a breakdown in, again, kind of family, in values. And when all of that comes together, it creates this travesty. It creates these atrocities. Mm. And so if you address, as we intend to, as a Restore Britain government would, each and every one of those problems, the rape gangs will disappear. Now, of course, we're going to go after them directly. You don't just deal with the symptoms, the causes. You go after the symptoms as well. But ultimately, it does have to be dealt with at root. It has to be dealt with at bottom. And that bottom is the ruling class. That bottom is the elite that has presided over this country, really, since the end of the Second World War, and the agenda that they have sought to impose upon us, which is really the complete deconstruction of our nation, the complete deconstruction of everything it is to be English and British. Mm. You know, the destruction of our culture, of our history, the indoctrination of our people, our young people, to hate themselves, to cower at the accusation of racism, as has been most tragically demonstrated in the case of Henry Novak recently, of course, the footage of which came out last night, and it was harrowing. All of this needs to be dealt with. And this is the point. This is what we keep saying. I certainly keep saying it. It is that to merely want to conserve or reform things as they are, which is what the other two, you know, quote unquote right-wing parties want to do, offer the British people, it's nowhere near enough.
Yeah.
Like, what we need is a revolution. What we need is to literally completely tear down and salt the earth, you know, of where this regime once stood, and to implement laws that prevent these things from ever happening again. Implementing education, which shows future generations how bad things were. Museums and monuments to all of these atrocities that we've had to suffer at the hands of this ruling class, this post-war elite, and their mad ideas.
I love it. It's music to my ears, Charlie. It really is, yeah. A government that's not only got sort of based ideas, sort of a proper sort of patriotic nativist worldview, but the guts, the balls to actually do it, to grab Whitehall by the scruff of the neck.
Yeah.
And make it happen.
Yeah.
Not just twiddling around the edges,
no,
afraid to tweak policy a little bit here and there. No, wholesale change.
Yes.
wholesale change of policies. End whole departments and make new ones if you need to. Staff them with new people. Yeah. Things like that.
Yes.
And it's the way government often used to be done. Mm. If you look at government in the 18th, 19th century, even sort of... You look how Churchill conducted government during the war. Of course, it's a pretty special case, World War II, but nonetheless. Now, you'll make massive sweeping changes, completely unapologetically. Mm. So, again... afuera, get rid of whole departments if need be, change the budgets, change what the Treasury does profoundly.
Yes.
Not just tweak things here and there, but get scrap whole things and start whole new things.
Well, this is why
I've been... not be afraid to do it.
Yes.
Do it.
This is why I've been pushing a lot recently for us as a movement to liberate our minds from the false kind of left-right paradigm. Because in my view, what that refers to is like the establishment. You have the establishment, then you have the left of the establishment and the right of the establishment. And the thing that unites them is a shared vision for what this country should look like. Because if you listen to Zach Polanski talk about British identity, it is indistinguishable from Richard Tice. Or David Bull, or Zia Youssef.
Yeah.
They both believe that Britishness is conferred by British values and by having a passport, which is obviously complete nonsense. Yeah, yeah. And so what you realise is that it's not, you know, you don't want to join the establishment. You don't want to be right wing, because what that means, or left wing, because what that means is that you're joining the establishment as it currently exists. You should think of yourself as being completely outside of that establishment. And this is what I think people are responding to with Restore, is they can tell that we are something completely new. Completely, we haven't seen this before, what Restore represents. Mm. There's a new style of politics, which is not really, it can't really be categorized, in my view, as left or right, because it doesn't, we don't want to make peace with the establishment and use their, you know, play the game on their terms. Mm. We want to, as I said, destroy the establishment and create a new establishment, which will contain within it its own left and its own right. And I like to imagine, you know, what the left will look like under a Restore Britain government. It will be like, you know, there'll be like mass deportations will be the that'll be the left wing position. That'll be
right,
the moderate option.
That's the centrist option. The centrist dad position.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Because and just on this point, I've lost my train of thought. Never mind. Let's move on.
Well, I saw someone in the chat say, "F Churchill." I'm not talking about following Churchill's policies.
Yeah.
I'm talking about how Churchill grabbed government by the horns.
Yes.
How he dominated policy in government, not his actual policies. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say.
Right. And so, and you look back at earlier prime ministers, much more from the 19th century, where they would say, no, the direction of government, my view of, my vision of what the country will be is really quite different to what it is right now. And we're going to go that way.
Yes.
Not what someone like Gordon Brown did. When Gordon Brown got into government from Tony Blair, he basically changed nothing. He changed, like, he honestly tweaked little things like the nature of when a flag would go up or down outside number 10, something like that.
Useful.
When Boris got in, or Theresa May got in, or Rishi got in, they profoundly changed nothing. Mm. Nothing.
Yeah. And so this is what I was
going to
say.
That's not good enough. If Rupert gets in, or Restore get in, or whatever,
yes,
it needs to be sort of ruthless. Mm. It needs to be sort of a whole new paradigm.
Yes.
Again, whole departments are not fit for purpose.
Yes.
Whole new departments be made while those old ones are phased out. Mm. Things on that level.
Yes. And that's what I was going to say just now before I lost my train of thought.
Go ahead.
It is that part of the problem of the kind of false left-right dichotomy is you end up embracing a package of ideas which may not actually be coherent. Because you think about what the right is, what the right of the establishment is. It's conservative. It's reformist. It is kind of wears a cheap costume of patriotism, but is ultimately complacent and weak and atrophied and supine and pathetic. Doesn't want to do anything. Doesn't want to use the state. Doesn't want to use power to do things. Whereas the left is, you know, anti-patriotic, but also progressive and radical and wants to use power to do things. And the idea that you have to buy into one or the other is nonsense, because what we represent is, yes, a patriotic force, but also a force that is very, very prepared to use state power to do things, you know, to wield the power of the state, as you're describing, to create departments, to destroy departments, you know, to actually achieve things, to progress our country in the truest sense,
real
not in this
change.
False sense. Yeah, exactly.
Real change, not the sort of change that Cameron or Rishi would talk about, not the sort of change that Obama was talking about.
Yeah.
Actual change.
Yeah, not just decline.
Real change.
Different flavours of decline.
Yeah.
No, something completely new.
That's why just the names, just restore and reform.
Mm.
It says it so much, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It says it so much that one is seeking to reform, to move the deck chairs around slightly.
Yes.
And the other one is no.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah.
Stop where you are.
Mm.
We're going to go back. We're going to change. We're going to take it to what we really want.
Yes.
Okay.
And not to be too semantic, because I know we need to move on.
No, yeah.
But not to deal too much in semantics, but it is. I think it's really important, because what does restoration mean? I mean, I think about a manor house, a grand old, you know, English country house, which has fallen into disrepair. The windows are smashed, doors kicked in, there's squatters living inside, there's graffiti all over it. And, you know, what we're seeking to do is, one, recognise that this house was once great and has an ideal form, which it was once close to. Two, is not currently in that form and is in fact in a far worse state than it was. And three, that things can be done to bring that house back to its former glory. Kick out the squatters, fix the windows, fix the doors, you know, fix up the garden, make it beautiful, have the proper people living there. And then what you have is a restored property, something that was great, declined, and then was made great again. So it's not about going back as such, but it is about looking back, recognizing what made us great, recognizing what made the house, our home, this country great, understanding the principles that were at play, and taking those forward with us.
Mm.
You know, it is progressive in that sense. It is forward facing, but it's not progressive in the egalitarian, finest sense that our leaders enjoy.
I know, I'm fully aware that as a history nerd, you can never go back.
No.
You can never actually go back. That's truly go back. That's an infantile thing.
Mm.
Like, I don't know if at some point you were in your teenage years or your early 20s and it crossed your mind, oh, it's so much easier when I was a kid, when everything was done for me and I didn't actually have to deal with adult things.
Yeah.
I wish I was a kid again. Yeah. But you realise actually that's sort of insane and very, very unhealthy.
Yeah.
You can only ever go forward.
Mm. And so, you realise you don't actually want that as well.
Yeah, and as well, yeah, yeah. To be like some sort of arrested development.
Yeah.
And it's the same with the country. Of course, you can never actually go back.
Mm.
That the past is profoundly lost to us.
Yes.
But what you can do, exactly as you said, is look at what made that good.
Mm.
Look at what made that great. And try to recreate that, if you like. Try to emulate that as best as possible. Or at the very least, cut out and throw away what's evil and dangerous and poisonous.
Yes.
Can we do that at least?
Yeah.
Can we recognise we're being poisoned here and try and do something about it? That we're bleeding out.
Yeah.
Can we stem the bleeding? Can we get a tourniquet at least?
Mm.
You know? Okay, all right. Should we... I'm talking about bleeding out. There's the Henry Novak thing here. Yeah. Jesus. Oh, Christ. Sorry, I shouldn't blaspheme. Yeah, so this is in the news cycle today, and they released the body cam footage. I've only seen the 30-40 second clip, but you said there's like a 3-minute one. I haven't seen, so.
I watched it this morning, first thing when I woke up, because I saw it had been released late last night. Weird timing.
Mm.
But let's not read too much into that. And it was, yeah, honestly, one of the most harrowing things I've ever watched. It's just awful. I mean, hindsight is 2020, and sure, who knows what was going through the minds of the police officers there at the time, not trying to defend them. But you can literally hear Novak gurgling. You can hear the rattling in his breath where he's been stabbed in the lung, apparently, which is what happened.
Mm.
And yet these police officers, and you can see how pale he is.
You can see
he's been bleeding for an hour at this point. And yet they still insist upon handcuffing him. He says, I've been stabbed. The male police officer says, don't think you have, mate.
Yeah, I saw that.
Honestly, one of the most disgusting, disturbing, enraging things I have ever seen. I mean, this poor lad, look at him, 18 years old.
That cop, the male cop, should not be a cop anymore.
Yeah, no, he should hang.
You see
legally
him when he's...
after a trial.
He's, Restorer want to bring back the death penalty, don't they?
Certainly do.
I think in certain circumstances, absolutely.
Just for the avoidance of doubt, that was not an incitement. I believe that after a fair trial, under a restored government, we should hang.
Okay, yeah. Not just a lynching.
No.
No, right.
Don't endorse that.
Let's be clear. He's like, he's slurring his words. He's sort of not moving. He's certainly not resisting arrest.
Mm.
Why would you put cuffs on him? Mm. I just do not understand. And that cop, he's very, very nonchalant, is he?
Yeah.
Isn't he?
He's jovial. He's laughing.
He's like, I've been stabbed. He's like, I don't think you have, mate. Anyway, give me your hand, put the handcuffs on.
Yeah.
It's odd. It's, well, a bit more than odd. Mm. It's absolutely revolting. But okay, let's talk a little bit about Makerfield, can we?
Yes.
While I've got you here.
Let's. Slightly
just,
more cheerful.
Rather than yes. just talk about what's on the front pages today. While I've got you here, a little bit about Makerfield.
Mm.
One of the things I want to ask you about is that even now, well, at least up until last night, the legacy corporate mainstream media are still going with that bit of data that shows Burnham just ahead of Reform and Restore on 7.
Mm.
They're still using that bit of data,
yes,
which is well out of date now. What, 3 weeks old, something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, it was a poll of. I mean,
And it was only 370 odd people
yeah,
anyway.
Exactly.
So it's a really dodgy, crappy old bit of data now.
Yeah.
And they're still using that.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts and feelings on that?
Well, I mean, it's not accurate. If our canvassing returns are anything to go by, and we've had thousands of people out in the streets of Makerfield knocking on doors, gathering voter intentions, and based on our data, 7% is absolutely nothing close to what we're achieving. I think the last figures that we published were 18% for us. And as far as I'm aware, it's gone up since then, our prediction. But I mean, local elections, famously difficult to predict. But yeah, 7% is farcical in my view. And I think we're going to do far better than anyone realises, to the extent that whilst we may not win, I think, you know, winning would be incredible, but we are, at the end of the day, a new young party with limited resources. I think we're going to do very well, to the point where it's going to be clear that we're not just cutting votes away from Reform. We actually have our own base, our own people who are, in many cases, previous non-voters. I mean, in Makerfield, 50% of the electorate didn't vote in the 2024 general election. And so if...
50%.
Yeah, I know. And it's just a, so it's a prime example of one of these places in Britain now where a huge number of people there just feel completely disenfranchised. They feel completely, you know, disconnected from the political class, unrepresented by them, uninterested in their vision and agenda for the country. And this is not dissimilar to Great Yarmouth. Great Yarmouth is one of these places.
Yeah.
And if our results at the local elections there are anything to go by, I think we have the potential in Makerfield to massively increase voter turnout on the previous elections and potentially do very, very well.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. That 50% of completely disenfranchised, disenchanted voters, that's massive. Rupert and Restore do seem to be speaking to those people.
Mm.
If the Great Yarmouth local election results are anything to go by. If Restore come third in this, that's a remarkable achievement.
Yeah.
If they come third and there's clear light between the whoever comes fourth, Conservative, Green, Lib Dem, whatever. When it looks like at least that's going to be the case.
Yes.
At absolute least that's going to be the case. That's an achievement.
Mm.
If they come second, really, really quite remarkable.
Yes.
And if they win it, which I wouldn't rule out.
Mm. No, not me.
I really, really wouldn't rule it out.
Right.
That is something. I hesitate to take it too fast to call it something like seismic.
Mm.
But it will be a bellwether. It will be something really quite, well, it'd actually probably be something close to unprecedented.
Yes.
That such a new party, basically a brand new party, could come in somewhere and just win a by-election like that against a big beast like Burnham, who's trying to use the entire, as much of the Labour Party apparatus as possible, a known household name type person, to beat him. Restore could win that by-election.
Mm.
And as I say, even if they come third, that's, in the scheme of things, quite a big win.
Well, we would have beat the Conservatives, beat the Lib Dems, beat the Greens, you know.
Yeah.
I think, it's important to manage expectations, obviously.
Yeah.
But I mean, based on the data that we're seeing, I am confident that we're going to do very, very well.
Yeah, from everything I've heard, and I've heard a fair bit, you know a whole bunch of people, know some people really well that have been there, have been actually on the streets knocking on doors and things. And they do say just the reality, just the straight up reality on the street is that quite a lot of people are talking about Restore and Rupert.
Yeah. And our presence is visible because we have, you know, as all parties do really, but we have signs that people can put up in their gardens if they wish to show their support for us. And again, back to Great Yarmouth, when we were campaigning there at the locals, hundreds of those signs were up, and they were the only signs that were up. I saw in my canvassing experience there, I saw one Labour sign, I think three Green signs, a couple of Reform signs, and dozens of Great Yarmouth First, Restore Britain signs.
Right.
And in Makerfield, there is, again, a huge number of our signs going up. And that physical presence, that kind of physical show of strength, does a huge amount to, I think, the psyche of a place. Because it shows you, actually, this is not a kind of minor party that's just going to split the vote. This is actually a serious party with its own offering that is genuinely different to all of the other parties on offer here. Let's actually look into them. Let's see what they're offering for the area. And I think what people are finding, this is the case nationwide, but especially at this by-election, is that the more they get to know Restore Britain, the more they get to know Rupert as a man, the more they like him. The more they like our party, the more they like our agenda, not just for the area, but for the country. And that's because, again, this idea that there's no difference between Reform and Restore is plainly nonsensical.
Yeah.
Because if you read, I mean, you read
pure
our
cope from Reform cards,
read our
cope
policies, and it's completely different to the wetness, the weakness of Reform. And as such, as you know, Bo, there's been a string of hit pieces against us over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, they've
hit
decided
pieces against myself personally.
They've decided to move from ignoring you to attacking you.
Yeah, I mean, one came out on me personally in Guido Fawkes just last night. And it's very, very thin stuff. It was basically talking about how the first job that I did in politics was managing an independent candidate for Mayor of London's campaign. And in the article, it was quite funny because it said the candidate got 26,000 votes, which, to be fair to Downs, is a very strong showing for an independent candidate. So they can't even, you know, they can't even do a hit piece without praising us. But no, I mean, many of these hit pieces have come from reform-aligned mouthpieces. They've also come from people that don't like our position on foreign policy. That's been a real kind of feature of a lot of these for some reason. Don't know why that is relevant to a by-election in Makerfield, but in the Mail, in Spiked, in the Times, and in various other places, we've been the target of all sorts of smears, which I take to be only a good thing.
You're
because
right.
It shows you that they are actually afraid of us now.
Yeah, you're over the target, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And the fact that they fall so flat, so hollow. Mm. I mean, I've been attacked, you know, a number of times on like Hope Not Hate or whatever. It's a badge of honour, really.
Yeah.
It means you've annoyed the right people. Mm-hmm. Basically is all it is, because of course you know what it's like being on Twitter and being in the public eye. You get attacked verbally from every single angle. And I don't know about for you, but for me, a very, very small amount of it, very, very small amount of it ever hits home.
Yeah,
where I'm like, oh, okay, that's so true, that's actually hurt me. Oh, you've got a point there. Like 99% plus of it is laughable.
Yeah.
Absolutely laughable. And nearly everything I've seen, or if not everything I've seen in the last week or so that's attack pieces on Restore, I'm like, that's just Streisand effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, bring it. Literally. Bring it. That's just more Streisand effect for us. Yes. Yeah.
Well, the one that always gets me, and that, you know, me and my comrades talk about, Harrison Pitt, Lewis Brackpool, Connor, and others, is the ones that call us grifters. Because this just doesn't make any sense to me. Because all of us, at one point or another, had the opportunity to shut our mouths and get in with Reform UK or get in with the Conservative Party. And if we'd really been just about our own status and our, and you know, making money or whatever out of this business, we could have very easily done that. But all of us chose not to. All of us chose to go this path of refusing to kind of compromise on our principles and join parties like that, and really only allying with those parties in the past out of convenience because they were the only vehicles available.
Now that
we have Restore, we have a genuine party and man, future Prime Minister, that we can get behind. And so the idea that we're somehow fake or only in it for the paycheck or something is again nonsense. I just don't understand this line of argument. But as you say, I mean, many of the arguments made in these hit pieces against us have been similarly absurd. Really weak, thin stuff.
The projection from ex-Tory wannabe spads turned wannabe Reform spads accusing you guys. No, it's like when I was in Reform, it was because there was, at that point in time, there was no other option.
Yeah.
But I would never want to get involved in the Tory party, never, ever, ever. So the only thing, short of like trying to do something with like Homeland or Heritage Party or something, short of that, the only option was Reform. I got involved in Reform when Richard Tice was the leader and they were polling at like 2-3%.
As did I.
Yeah. Right. Okay, I was too spicy
what else
for
was
them.
There?
I was there was nothing. There was nothing else, realistically. Okay, I was too spicy for them. They kicked me out. All right. I'm not so butthurt about that.
No.
That's what drives Like, a lot of people say, oh, it's just a revenge project on Nigel. No, no. I don't like Nigel.
Yeah.
I don't think he's good enough. I think he's weak sauce. I think he's a containment project, a vanity project, all that. But that's not what's motivating me.
No, of course not.
Not at all.
I mean, I
it's about trying to save my country from a sectarian nightmare.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that Rupert and Restore is the most realistic option.
Yeah.
Certainly more better, just simply better than reform for that.
Yeah.
That's what I care about.
And this is
I want to try and reduce the number of murders and rapes that are going on in my country.
Yeah.
I want to try and save my people, my country, from annihilation.
Yeah.
And I've made the calculation that Restore is the best, most realistic vehicle to even have a shot at doing that.
Yeah. And this is the point. Politics is all about compromise, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Guys like us.
It's an it's an endless exercise in compromise.
But of course it is. And this is the point, again, like on this, not to go on too much about these hit pieces, because like genuinely they don't bother me, but it's just interesting. One of them against me a few months back was about the fact that I had applied to work for Robert Jenrick in 2024. Now, bearing in mind, this was at a time when reform were, it was increasingly evident that reform were not what we thought they were. And, you know, therefore, I thought, well, as a nationalist, as someone who wants to save this country, what are the vehicles available to me? At the time, Robert Jenrick was saying some fairly based stuff. So, and he was hiring in his office. So I thought, okay, I'll shoot off an application. Why not? If it works out, it works out. That then gets leaked to the press by his office, by the way, which is incredibly scummy, because it's like, what are you doing sharing private details of a job applicant to the press? And in some way to kind of, discredit me in some kind of a sense. And it's like the people that use that against me, I just don't, because it's like, what did you think I was doing? Like, I'm not, if you followed my work for any amount of time, you know I'm not a Tory. Like, I hate conservatives and I'm not a conservative myself. It's, you know, it's all about a means to an end. It's about you working with the materials you have at a given time. And the same goes for reform. You know, I was involved with reform in the past because they were the only viable vehicle at the time. Yeah. And again, what's so refreshing now, what's so rewarding now, is the fact that we have a party that it's not just a kind of alliance of convenience. It's not just the least worst option. It's actually something positive. It's actually something that we can genuinely get behind.
Yes, yes.
And that's why I have got behind it. That's why I've put my entire, you know, personal and professional reputation on the line to back and you know, be part of Restore Britain from day one and to make Rupert Lowe Prime Minister. Like, if that's grifting, then, you know,
yeah,
I don't know what that means.
Fine, yeah.
Yeah.
That is one of the, arguably for me, anyway, for me, one of the great things about Restore is that not only is it not merely one man and a social media account, not that it's merely some angry young rightoids on Twitter, that it's so much more than that, and that it's positive.
Yeah.
People have got optimism about it. When you go on the ground in somewhere like Great Yarmouth or Makerfield or any sort of local branch meeting, it's there is an anger, there is a rage there motivating people.
It's not nihilistic,
But right,
it's
exactly.
not nihilistic.
But there's it's that nothing is over.
Yeah.
Nothing is lost. Actually, now we're happy, we're over the moon even, that there's something we can do.
Yes.
There's actually something we can get behind. That a bit of hope. Mm. Dare I use the word?
Yeah.
Dare I even dream of using the words?
Yeah.
Just whisper the word hope.
Yeah.
Hope.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of bloody hope and optimism, and that is gold dust. You can't buy that.
Yeah.
You cannot buy that. Mm. And Restore seems to have a little bit of it. And I have not really known it my whole life.
No.
And it makes my heart swell. It really does. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, this is the point, I think, is, you know, some have, again, including Matt Badloss, have accused us of being nihilists. And it's like, I'm not a nihilist. I'm a Christian. I'm an Englishman. I won the lottery of life by being born in this country. Yeah, things are a bit bleak, but actually the idea that anything is done is ridiculous. It's for the birds.
I'm not a nihilist. I despise defeatism.
Yeah.
I won't have it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have it. Defeatism. I often dislike accelerationism, even.
Yeah.
But doomerism and defeatism. No. I don't want to hear of it.
Yeah.
Don't come to me with that.
Yeah.
No, nothing is over. Mm. Nothing is over. We've barely begun, actually.
Yeah.
You want me to just roll over and accept it, to become a minority in my own ancestral homeland, a despised and marginalised minority in my own ancestral homeland, and ultimately give up? Just give up, just cower in a basement in silence while your whole country and people are destroyed. No, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
No, you can go and do that if you want to go and do that, but I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
So nihilism.
And again,
come
I, think,
on.
I think the timescale that modern people...
Not nihilists.
No. The timescale modern people think on is also part of the problem, because I think we do think in terms of election cycles. We think about what's happening in 5 years, in 10 years, 15, 20 years. That's generally the time horizon that many people have. But actually, we need to be thinking on hundreds of years, thousands of years. You know, we're a 1,000-year-old kingdom. That's what England is. And we need to be thinking about where we're going to be in the next 1,000 years. Like, this is not about, like, sort of, you know, minor tweaking. This is about civilization. You know, this is about the future of our people.
Yeah. For the type of country that our great-great-great-grandchildren will inherit.
Exactly.
Will it be a hellscape or not? Mm. I mean, that is the question, isn't it? And this sort of thing where Richard Tice and many others have said, oh, well, I don't care what happens in the next but in the next 30, 40 years because I'll be dead. It won't matter to me. That's pretty much evil.
Yeah.
It's not just sort of wrong-headed or slightly annoying or frustrating to hear. That's evil.
Yeah.
That's at odds with everything our ancestors ever thought and did. Mm. Like, what is that?
Yeah.
That attitude of, I won't be here, so who cares?
Yeah.
Again, sickening, really, to me.
It's actually despicable.
It's the 180 of what is the frame of mind needed.
Yes.
The exact opposite of what's needed. Okay, all right. We're getting towards, it's very nearly the top of the hour, so if I quickly whip through on this day in history bit, and then we'll do some super chats, which we've been riffing. So I always do this every day, but I'll quickly whip through it. It says, on this day, which is the 2nd of June, in the year 455, King Jaseric, it's written there, Jaseric, I've always known it as Genseric, king of the Vandals, sacks Rome. And looting continues for 14 days. Of course, Alaric sacked Rome back in 410, so it wasn't the first sacking since Brennus. Nonetheless, this one was much worse than Alaric's sacking. So it's sort of the end of Rome in the West by that point. Not exactly, but that Genseric sacking was quite something. On this day in 1862, Robert E. Lee takes command of the Confederate armies of Northern Virginia during the American Civil War. And of course, Robert E. Lee was a battlefield tactical master. Kept the Civil War going a lot longer than probably it otherwise would have done because he was so good as a general, a general's general. What did they call it? They called him something like... as a term of endearment, like Nanny Lee or something like that. So he had like white hair, but he treated his men really well, like a kindly old nanny.
Oh, right.
Right, but it was a term of endearment. They called him something like that. Anyway, on this day in 1896, Italian engineer and inventor Marconi applies for the first ever patent for a system of wireless telegraphy in the United Kingdom. Yeah, Marconi. The Marconi company to this day is one of the biggest ones, isn't it? Okay, on this day in 1953, the Queen's coronation.
Wow.
There she is, the young queen. And on this day in 1989, 10,000 Chinese soldiers are blocked by 100,000 citizens in Tiananmen Square after the death of, Hu Yobang or something. He was their leader and he was sort of slightly more liberal, not in our sense of the word liberal, but liberal for a ruling member of the CCP.
Yes.
And he died... And students at that time thought they could sort of rise up a bit and claim their country back in some way. But in the end, they're all massacred by the... Not all. A lot of them were massacred by the army. I once shared a house when I was young, when you have to share a house with like five other people. I once shared a house with a Chinese girl, or she was the girlfriend of the person I was living with, Chinese. Somehow, at some point, Tiananmen Square came up. That iconic image of the guy with his carrier bag standing in front of a tank. Don't know how it came up, but it did. And she said, he's still alive. They didn't hurt him. Nothing really happened there. There was no massacre in Tiananmen Square. Really? That was all sort of, that's Western propaganda. Absolute insane liars and nonsense. No, there was a massacre there.
Yeah.
There was a terrible massacre of people there. The army firing into crowds, crushing people under armoured vehicles and all sorts of stuff. So that's who the CCP are. It's the same regime to this day. Yeah. Occasionally you get people, because I'm quite hardline against China. Some people say, why are you so hardline against China? Why am I supposed to worry about fear China? Get real. Get a clue. They're one of the worst cabals in the entire world.
Yes.
all right, let's do the Rumble Answer Super Chats. Hopefully we'll have something that we can chat a little bit about.
Just on that very quickly.
Yeah.
I don't like that tendency in certain elements of our spheres of just being contrarian for the sake of it and saying, like, actually China is based and Russia is based. It's like, they're not. They're not. They're our enemies, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They are strategic enemies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If they could live in a world where we didn't exist, they would.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. First in is a Busted Brian. Busted Brian says, my apologies regarding me trying to correct you last week about the Digwa trial. Oh, yeah. This was a chap who said it was not murder. It was manslaughter that he was convicted on. But that, I think that's just wrong.
False.
It was just murder.
Yeah.
So that's fine, Busted Brian. Don't worry about it. He got it wrong.
What the hell is a Digwa?
What's the... I had facts wrong due to a misunderstanding. No worries, mate. I thought the judge set aside the jury's verdict. Here's a coffee on me. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And don't worry about it. We'll, you know, no problem. We'll get things wrong. Okay. Global Church History in at number two. He's usually in at number one most mornings. Pardon me. He says, on this day in 260 AD, Emperor Chow Mao's attempt to oust his Majordono Sima Zhao failed. I don't know anything about that, I'm afraid. I can't really comment on that. He's out history broed me on that one. And he died instead. And on this day in 1608, the Virginia colony received its charter. I know much more about that. Virginia, obviously, like a lot of the founding fathers were Virginiamen.
Yes.
Like Jefferson. Jefferson was a Virginiaman. I think Washington was as well. I find it really interesting that even up to the late 1770s, quite often these people, that was the state that they were from was their country.
Yes.
Because, of course, there was no United States. They were like, if you asked someone like Jefferson or Washington, they would say, I'm a Virginiaman.
Mm.
I'm not an Englishman. I'm obviously not an American yet, a citizen of the United States. I'm a Virginiaman. My country is Virginia.
Mm.
That, in fact, that we were just talking about Robert E. Lee. That's what he would say. When he was asked, because they wanted him to fight for the Union, because he was one of the best generals. And he had to decide between whether his country, his loyalty, was to the United States or to Virginia.
Mm.
And obviously he chose Virginia. But anyway, I find that interesting.
It is, in a way, it does make more sense. I mean, the modern idea of the United States, I do find it's quite a kind of... you know, it's an empire, right? It's a continental empire. It's not one country. It doesn't, you know, we're talking about 330 million people here with states the size that...
It's one nation, indivisible.
Yeah. I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
It's indivisible under the eyes of God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Hamilton would disagree. I've got content about Hamilton.
Mm.
Anyway, we'll move on. I'm not a secessionist. We had Radley on the other day. I think he's a secessionist.
Oh, yeah?
There's plenty of Americans that do think that.
Yeah.
But I think the Republic has done remarkably well for itself under that paradigm. But okay, let's move on. Jeffrey Farnall says, I feel more and more like the SNES game, Super Nintendo. That must be before your time.
No, it is, but I played Chrono Trigger on an emulator when I was growing up. So
I had a SNES in real life. I got it when it came out. It must have been 10 or 11 or 12. Yeah. And it was the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Best Christmas ever.
Some of my favourite games are on the SNES, actually.
But I've never played that. He says...
Have you not?
He says,
it's great.
He says, I feel more and more like the SNES game Chrono Trigger.
Yes.
Had the best prediction of the future where we have robots, but we're all actually poor and destitute. I've never played... I've not even heard of Chrono Trigger.
It's brilliant. It's just an RPG. Okay. It's a top-down... Okay. Beautiful as well. Amazing visual style.
Oh, sounds nice.
Worth a play.
Sounds nice. I might have my SNES somewhere in a loft somewhere. One of my relatives have still got it. I don't know. SNES was great when it first came out. All right. Jeffrey Farnall again says, continued, but that's okay, because some plucky friends from around the 17th century will travel through time and to save the past and the future. Great game. I love the show, Bo. Well, thank you very much for that sentiment. What's the thing about people travelling back from the 17th
century? There's time travel in
there. Oh, right. Oh, okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. Fallen Firebird says, when I hear the demonic accounts of the rape gangs, I feel a sort of soul rot I can barely describe. Mm. Yeah. It's an awful fusion of helplessness, anger, hate, sorrow, and a yearning to stop it at all costs. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's articulated very well, Fallen Firebird. Yeah, I feel that those exact same things.
Yeah.
Like an anger, a rage, a sorrow.
Yeah.
All those things.
I mean, look, not to get all theological, but I mean, I do view these things through, you know, through the lens of being a Christian. And that, like, soul rot, it's a really interesting choice of language there, because what you're dealing with is wrath. You know, wrath, which is a sin, ultimately. It's a deadly sin. And that kind of the black hatred that you feel in your heart when you hear these accounts can be harnessed and can be used for the good, but in and of itself is not something to entertain. We have to be just. We have to be honest.
Well, yeah, that's the thing I wrote in my article that was very briefly put on the Mallard before they shit their pants.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not supposed to swear on the Bo Show. Apologies, everyone, for that. Before Mallard lost their nerve and
are
took it down.
I
don't know. I don't even know. The Hope Not Hate picked up on. That got me deselected from Reform. In that, I said, we need to do something really drastic, forced remigration, but we need to do it without disgracing ourselves.
Yes, I remember reading this piece.
Because it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah.
Forced remigration, deporting millions of people, many of them against their will. That's not going to look pretty.
Yeah.
But we should be able to do it without disgracing ourselves.
Yeah, humanely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what you say about from the Christian angle, because, you know, Jesus would talk about how love your enemy as much as you love yourself and things like that, as much as you love your friends and stuff. But he also did turn the tables over in the temple, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
He did also say sometimes take up a sword.
Yes.
Sometimes go out and buy a sword.
Yeah.
Because it's actually righteous, the right thing to do to fight against things that are truly, truly evil and wrong.
Yeah.
And... Well, you can read the Gospels a number of different ways, can't you? You can find passages that justify very, very different things, can't you?
Yeah. So, this idea of loving your enemy, I mean, it's the most challenging and radical idea in human history. But what it really means is wanting the salvation of the souls of your enemies. Because there's nothing worse than a fate of being disconnected from God by living in a sinful way. So, you know, the rape gang perpetrators, ultimately, as Christians, we should still pray for their conversion and for their repentance. But the most effective way for them to convert and repent is to tell them that tomorrow you're going to be executed. You better get right with God.
Right.
You know, to want the best for them is to punish them justly, because it's hateful to not to punish someone justly for something they've done wrong. Like, as a father, if your son does something wrong, if he swears at your wife, at his mother, then not punishing him that's not a loving thing to do. You know, letting things slide, that's not loving, because you don't have their best interest at heart when you do that. And the same goes for criminals. You know, if you have their best interests at heart, you punish them justly.
Yeah, well, as a non-Christian myself, or perhaps you might say a lapsed Christian, something like that, I'm not concerned with their soul.
Yeah, fair enough.
Just the punishment will do me. All right, so the last rubble rant here, GWFF says, restore compulsory national service. Allow a choice of occupation, but mandate it to be public front-facing service jobs, if not in the armed forces, NHS or fire brigade. Young'uns belong in society.
I don't think it's a terrible idea.
No. There's loads of countries to this day you still have national service. Greece, yeah. Israel, a number of countries where, if you're at a certain point in your life, you know, probably just after uni, something like that, maybe when you're 19, 20, 21, you're forced by the state to take a year out and do some national service, not necessarily in the army. As exactly as GWFF says, they're not necessarily in the army, especially if we've got like a million plus neats that are literally sitting at home doing nothing, quite literally twiddling their thumbs. Why not let them work in like the NHS or the fire brigade or something, or even in the armed services for a year? It's not a terrible idea. I don't think 100% forced every single person. Well, anyway, it's not a terrible idea. Harry, can you bring up the YouTube super chats for me, please? You have to do that. Could you make it so? Engage. There they are. Okay. How many have we got here? Roughly a dozen or more. Let me quickly rattle through these then. Global Church History. Oh, he's done YouTube and Rumble Rants. First in on YouTube. Still at number one. It's the Feast of the Visitation in Anglicanism. What, today, I take it? Okay, that's very interesting. Thank you very much. The K-Man Live says, "I up, lads. Hope you're both well. Charlie, what's your opinion on the BBC, not Bo's Breakfast Club, in a theoretical restore government, would you shut it down completely or make it actually impartial and or based?"
So, I mean, there's two answers to that. The first is Restore's policy as things stand, which is to defund the BBC and essentially let it wither. Market, which, you know, I'm not entirely opposed to, but equally, not being a libertarian, I do think that there is, and this is my personal view, this is not the view of the party,
okay,
my personal view is that an institution like the BBC, a state broadcaster, is quite a useful thing to have. If it's got the right people in it, if it's essentially staffed by patriots, then it can be a very powerful thing. It can be a powerful thing for, you know, identifying talent, for giving a platform to people who may not otherwise have one, and for disseminating, you know, high quality information about our civilization, whether that's historical, whether that's about what's going on at the moment, you know, or fictional for that matter. Because I think there's, you know, I've often thought that I will know when Britain has re-entered world history when we have a booming film industry, because there's so much that you could do with our history. So, you know, if you had a high budget, a great director, and you know, the right talent, you could make some incredible historical dramas using modern technology from our thousands of years of history. And the BBC as an institution, I think, acting as a platform for that kind of thing would be only a good thing. And again, if the BBC was putting out, you know, the kinds, you know, propagating the kinds of ideas that you and I both believe in, I think it would be only a good thing. Like, I'm not opposed to the BBC in principle because, you know, because it's a, you know, because it's state funded or whatever. You know, I think the state, as we were talking about earlier, I think the state in the right hands can be used for good, and the BBC is no exception to that.
Interesting, interesting.
Do you disagree?
I would annihilate it.
I thought so.
I would annihilate it. I would take away its royal charter,
yep,
defund it entirely, and march everyone out of there. Get the parachute regiment to march. I think it's pure evil. I think it's always been pure evil.
Yeah.
Make a new one.
Yeah.
Perhaps make a new state media organ.
Yeah.
But the BBC deserves to die.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's evil.
Mm.
It beams evil anti-white propaganda into people's households.
Right now, that is true. Yes.
I do understand your view, though.
Mm.
And perhaps it's the more prudent way of doing it.
And I think there's,
but I feel like the BBC should be punished for its crimes against the people at this
stage.
Yeah,
I suppose so. I mean, but
make a new one. Make something entirely new.
The BBBC.
Yeah.
British Broadcasting.
The new BBC or something.
Yeah.
But as it is, a fuera.
Yeah.
It would be, I feel like it would be more difficult to change everyone out, change the culture entirely, change every single senior person out for somebody based.
Yeah,
that it would be easier just to kill it and start something entirely new.
That's, take GB News into public ownership.
That's why. No, that can go as well.
Yeah, I know.
It can go as well.
Yeah. They haven't had me on. I think they've had me on once since we launched Restore as a party. Bearing in mind, I used to have a show with them and used to get invited on like three times a week. So naked.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they've realised. I mean, doesn't Nigel call a lot of the shots there, though?
He owns a third of the shares, something like that.
That much? Okay, so you're his political enemy, and they're scared. So yeah, they'll try and just silence you, won't they? They'll just try and silence you. Try and ignore you, and short of that, ridicule you or attack you.
Yeah.
They don't want to give you airtime.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Luke Stewart says, "G'day, mates." He's an Aussie, I do believe. "G'day, mates. How good. Unfortunately, I missed yesterday's episode. I was wondering if you heard that in Australia, One Nation is now most popular party and is just 2 points shy in the two-party preferred." So, okay, that's their sort of base party, isn't it? Australia One Nation.
Yeah,
that's their version of...
I don't know a lot about them. I think they're closer to a reform type,
right,
I think. I don't know.
But I think it's still the best option they've got at the
minute.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
Like the most realistic best option. Yeah. So if nothing else,
yeah, gosh,
good.
It's better than the alternative. I
mean. Right. Yeah. Okay. And then LJMV for a decent amount of money. Thank you very much for that. Says, "Bo, you magnificent man." Thank you very much. Very kind. "Charlie, people need to understand how much of the post-World War II narrative has shaped their lives. Many have no idea what the Holodomor, or Great Leap Forward, the Ottoman, Berber slave trades, etc.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a lot there. The Holodomor, the Great Leap Forward, the post-World War II consensus. Mm. There's a lot there, isn't there? But
there certainly is. But yeah. I mean, this is the point. You know, it's not about going out and saying to the general public, everything you think you know is wrong. Because most people, that's just going to bounce off them and you're going to sound kind of crazy. But it's just about gently introducing ideas which are right out to the edge of what is conceivable in the minds of most people. And essentially tugging at that thread and saying, follow this through to its logical conclusion. Because many people realize, for example, that the accusation of quote-unquote racism is kind of nonsensical now and is just used to beat white people over the head for having the nerve to, love their own country, love their own people, and want to see them succeed and you know, not even succeed, just be preserved. And so, you know, if you tug on that thread and you say, well, if you recognize that this accusation of racism is just a tool used by people who hate us to oppress us, well, follow that through to its logical conclusion. Like, you know, who are these people? What is their agenda? What are they trying to do? Look around you. What's been happening to our country? Why is it that we can't have any pride in our history and in our culture? Why is it that we have to accept these new ideas about egalitarianism and diversity and all this nonsense when they are plainly making our society worse?
Yeah.
You know?
Good question.
Yeah.
Who are these people who have been peddling this view since the 1960s?
Yeah.
That Western culture, British culture, heritage and history is inherently evil.
Yeah.
And you can never escape the original sin of your ancestors. All that sort of stuff. Who are these people? Mm. And what is actually their agenda?
Yeah. Do you get the impression that they like you? Because I don't.
Very good question.
Yeah.
Very, very good question. All right, next one. Kick You in the Throat. That's their name. at Kick You in the Throat. Says, breaking news. Labour attempts to protect Hassan Piker from his own plans. I don't know if this is true or they're just saying this for a laugh. Labour tries to protect Hassan Piker from his own plans to enter the UK to produce propaganda with Jeremy Corbyn and Zach Polensky while he is under federal indictment. Is that true? I don't know if that's true.
I mean, he's been banned from coming to the UK, but right. I don't think that's the reason.
Oh, okay.
I think it's a humorous remark.
Okay, fair enough. Interesting. All right, LJMV again says, if you're not on the Hope Not Hate list, are you really based? Yeah.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
It's the Oscars. It's the based Oscars.
Yeah. Until they've done a hit piece on you.
Yeah,
you're under suspicion.
I got 12 mentions in the most recent State of Health.
Oh, did you? Well done. Well done. They always, of course, they always mention Carl, don't they?
Yeah.
I think most of the Lotus Eaters lads have been at least mentioned in passing.
Yeah.
I know they've obviously done a couple of bits on me over the times, but yeah, it really is sort of like a badge of honour.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, it doesn't really seem to work anymore either.
No.
Like, it doesn't really ruin your life. Well, if you've got an employer who's really, really woke and you get fired, then maybe.
Well, we are quite fortunate doing the job that we do.
Oh, of course we are. Oh, of course we are. Yeah. If you're a normal person that works for like a sort of a normal woke corporation, then yeah, it's going to be a worry.
Yeah.
But more and more people work for employers that aren't.
Yeah.
More and more people do work. You might work for a small business and your employer isn't an insane leftard.
Yes.
And so it doesn't ruin your life, actually.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, the point of Hope Not Hate really is to just launder accusations.
Yes.
So that other
really.
Publications can use them.
Yes, like, all
you know,
it is.
For example, I mean, I have a Wikipedia page now, which was quite surprising. And on that, it says, Downs has been described by anti-fascist organisation Hope Not Hate as a far-right activist. And it's like, to some people who are not in the know, that's going to read like, oh, he's, you know, there's this very official-sounding organisation has done an investigation and revealed this, that and the other. When actually they're just a bunch of like basement-dwelling shysters who just scroll on Twitter and say, oh, look, he said the word remigration. Get him.
Yeah. It is really pathetic. Yeah. It is almost like... the whole point of it is that if anyone Googled your name, their article comes up.
But nobody cares.
Do you know what? I can live with that.
Yeah.
Do you know what? If it's a difference between being scared of that and actually standing up for my country and my people, I'm going to choose that. I'm not scared of it.
And again, nobody cares about these things.
Yeah, no one really
cares about being called far right or racist or anything, because they don't mean anything.
And if I ever went for a job and I didn't get the job because of that, so be it. I wouldn't want to work there anyway.
Exactly.
Wouldn't want to work there anyway. It'd be insufferable to work somewhere like that anyway. All right. So Luke Stewart says, can't wait. We're going to get some BBC Pigeon from Dan. Best way to end the day. Hope everyone has a good night. And don't forget to like the live stream. Yeah, I never hardly say that. Do like... this. Click the thumbs up button. Mm. Get the bell on. Yep. All that sort of thing.
Smash like.
Yeah, smash.
Smash
it.
Subscribe.
Smash yeah. it. Don't just tentatively click on it.
Yeah.
Smash it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how you should start opening the show, baby. What is going on, yeah. guys? Welcome back.
Bit more energy, yeah. yeah. Okay, so J360 says, the enthusiasm is much needed, chaps. Thank you, yeah. A little bit of esprit de corps, right?
Indeed.
A little bit of optimism.
Oh, yes.
We got this.
Yeah, of course
we got this. I hate doomerism.
We're English.
I hate doomerism. I really do. It does make me...
Yeah.
It does make me want to puke. All right, so Dylan Lindsay says... whenever some communist yells at you for wanting to save your country, remember this. Their boos mean nothing. We've seen what makes them cheer. And that's a quote by someone. I don't know. I should know who...
It's from Rick and Morty, I think.
Is it?
I think so.
Oh, I was going to say someone... Okay.
I've not watched it, but I think it is from that. I mean, it's quite... It's a good message, though.
Their boos mean nothing. We've seen what makes them cheer.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm based, Rick. Okay. My thing just... stressed out a bit. What's going on here? Where was I? 2 seconds. It's just loads more ticked in or something.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. There's loads more, so I'll quickly whip through them. Mr. Dickie Bingo says, watching the momentum of Restore, each time they poll well and win an election, hope will build. Thanks for all your work, Charlie and the team.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. No, thank...
It's a pleasure.
Thank you guys, right, for... It sounds like a corny cliche, but it is true, isn't it? It's everyone out there that is making it, right?
Yeah.
It's a mass movement. It's a big tent already.
And honestly, I mean, right? you know, we do have... I mean, we owe a great deal to Carl and to you guys and to Lotus Eaters because, you know, the reach that you guys have is actually astonishing. And I'm sure you know this, but the number of people that are that have benefited from the message of this station is astonishing. It really is.
Great. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Carl must take most of it. Most people are here because of Carl, ultimately. They come for Carl, they stay for Bo.
yes, indeed.
The Lotus Eaters is the Bo Dade experience featuring Carl Benjamin. I shouldn't say that. I've never asked Carl, but I imagine he doesn't like me saying that. all right, moving on. Kick You in the Throat Again says, Anglosphere, fun fact, the English and their global diaspora are just way too cool and chill about everything. Fix everything button looking awfully nice. Yeah, mass remigration, the fix everything button.
Yeah.
I like it being characterised as that because it sort of is, isn't it? Or at least it's the very start. Mm. Kick You in the Throat Again says, Carmelo Anthony jury selection started today. Who's right. Carmelo Anthony? Is that the black kid that stabbed the white kid in America for no real reason?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the jury selection started today. Okay. Augustus Seidling says, where does one draw the line between wrath and righteous anger? Oh, well, that's an eternal question, isn't it?
Yeah. Like you said, I mean, I think it's about not disgracing yourself,
right?
Basically.
Throughout history, you know what just sprung to mind when someone asked that question? There was a famous crusader from the age of the First Crusade called Tancred.
Great name.
Yeah, brilliant name, yeah. Where he said, I want to go, the Pope has asked me to go out there and retake Jerusalem and slaughter infidels. Great, I'm up for that, that's what I do. I'm basically like a Norman knight, brilliant, yeah. But there is that thing in the what Jesus said though about not killing people though, isn't it? Or Moses even said, or God, sorry, said don't kill people.
Yeah.
So which one is it? My point of mentioning that is to say people have always asked themselves, where is the line between wrath and righteous anger?
Mm.
So if you were hoping we would just give you a one line, boom, that's the answer to that question.
Yeah.
I'm afraid not. It's more difficult than that. All right. Muscles Glacius says, played the new Bond game, MI6 and all DEI, lol.
That's a shame. I was quite looking forward to that. Yeah, it's made by the same people as the Hitman games, which I really like. So I was quite looking forward to that. So that's disappointing.
I haven't even got... I've got like an old Xbox 360, which I don't use much. So I don't play games, I'm afraid, too much.
Yeah.
Okay. Sardukar, 7th Legion, brilliant name, from June to the Sardukar. Why are we not using jails to sort out roads? What does that mean?
I'm assuming just putting them to work.
Oh, right, okay. Why are we not using people that are in jail to sort out roads, to do work. They do that in America in various places as well, don't they? Like a chain gang.
Yeah.
They'll take you out and make you do stuff. Yeah. It's a good question. Why not? Yeah,
I don't
why
think it's
not?
A terrible idea. Human rights, though, that's why.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, because there's probably some European or even UN legislation, something or other, some charter we've signed up to saying, you can't do that. That's against their human rights, isn't it? That's probably why. Okay, Luke Stewart says, Jesus did say, sell your cloak to buy a sword if you didn't have one. I like using given unto Caesar, which is Caesar, if Caesar's law, death penalty, 4CP. Do you know? I get the general gist of what they're saying.
Yeah,
I get the gist
as well.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so that's a classic thing. Again, down through the centuries, people have, various papal bulls and things, all sorts of people, all sorts of firebrands have said, pointed to different things in the Gospels to justify vastly different things.
Yes.
Sell your cloak to buy a sword if you don't have one. Right. Okay. Richard Drake says, Robert E. Lee. Well, he was called Granny Lee. That's right. They called him Granny Lee. It was meant as a term of endearment. Yes. His first command was in West Virginia, and he started his men digging entrenchments. Yeah. Because he looked after them like a granny would. Doesn't want to just send them to their deaths unnecessarily.
Yes.
Okay. But he was also actually quite a strict sort of, what's the word, like martinet, you know, very strict as well. Okay. LJMV says, One Nation are basically reform, unfortunately, sad face.
That's what I'd heard.
Right.
Yeah. Better than nothing.
I was just going to say, probably better than nothing though, isn't it? I hope you get a proper based party. Luke Stewart says, the best way to describe One Nation, it's reform if they hadn't kicked out the Restore people and instead listened to them. So Luke Stewart's saying it's not as bad as all that.
Okay.
Okay, LJMV perhaps again replying to that. Lotus Eaters need to keep, I hope not, hate tally. Whoever gets the most mentions at the end of the year gets a free tab at the pub for the night.
Well, I think Carl's going to win that.
It'll probably be Carl. He's just a staple, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know that when they bring out the State of Hate, there's a few people in there that are just a staple. They pretty much cut and paste it these days, don't they?
Yeah.
Or quite literally sometimes. Yeah. Just cut and paste last year's thing.
Yeah. Running out of ideas. Very sad to see.
Yeah. There's far too many people that have noticed reality now.
Yeah.
They've actually got quite a lot to pick to choose from.
Yeah.
Well, half the population, basically. Yeah. Okay. Last few here. Thundercork says, restore policy on Russian aggression in Europe.
I mean, we haven't got a fully fleshed out policy on that, but generally speaking, if something's against Britain's interests, which I would say Russian aggression in Europe is, we oppose it.
Right. Pretty straightforward. Rupert's like, whatever's in our best interest.
Yeah.
Could you ask for really a better foreign policy than that?
Yeah.
Why should it ever have been anything other than that at all times? Right. Great. Okay. Richard of Mersey says, life and limb without fear and favour is dead. Oh, just the way to live your life without fear and favour is dead. I mean, some people still don't give up. Mm. I don't think it is entirely dead.
No.
I think they would like you to think it's entirely dead. They would like you demoralised.
Yeah.
Like you to give up and be a defeatist and accelerationist and to just roll over and crawl away into the dark silently while they take everything. They would like you to think that's your only choice.
Yeah.
But it's not. Mm. Okay, and the very last one, August Seidling says, it was more of a philosophical, rhetorical question. Well, what was the last thing they said? What was it? Let's have a quick look. Augustus Seidling, when he says, where does one draw... Okay, they asked, where does one draw the line between wrath and righteousness? Yeah, no, fair enough, mate. Mm. It was more of a philosophical, rhetorical question. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, the attempt to even try to answer that was... Yeah. All right, that's the show. We'll have to leave it there for today. It is now 27 minutes past 9 in the AM, British Summer Time, on Tuesday the 2nd of June in the year of our Lord 2026. Charlie Downs, thank you for joining me.
Always a pleasure, bro.
Yeah, no, it's an honour and a pleasure to have you on. I'd have you on much, much more often if we could. So, all right, that is the show. You've been the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining me. Without you, it's a thing. Try and make the best of the day ahead. Carpe diem. Seize the day. It's the most valuable thing you'll ever have, your time. Try and make the most of it. All right, then. Until tomorrow morning. Take care.
Hello. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.